Good morning.
Morning.
The committed few here who braved getting up and arriving an hour earlier this morning. It was woke up and it was still dark, and I said, "Oh, I still have another hour to go back and roll over, go back to sleep." And nope, it was an hour ahead. So thank you all for being here. Three of this month's Sunday messages will have come in part from some of our members. And as many of you know, last week we heard an excellent message from Cheryl Lexon as she reminded us that it's beneficial to empower ourselves. We must engage in a kind of pay it forward method of serving others. We should take care of ourselves first so that we can then take care of others. And next week, we'll consider violence and gun rights, a topic suggested by new member Johannes Bjornert, who has personally experienced the horrors of guns and warfare. But today's message comes from Chris Adamson, a member of the Old Gathering, who won last year's auction bidding to choose a Sunday message theme. And Chris, as I recall, was engaged in a fierce bidding war with another member to win this amazing, amazing privilege. And if my memory is correct, she finally won the prize with a bid of $1.27. The other person, for some reason, just refused to go over $1.25. I encouraged Chris to choose a topic that deeply resonates with her, one that intersects with her life interests. And after some thought, Chris indicated that throughout her life, she has witnessed in herself and in others the peril of making assumptions. And too often, thoughtful people are trapped by their flawed beliefs. Without even being aware of mistaken assumptions, people proceed to live according to beliefs that are simply wrong. And as we know, a fact is an assertion of a thing that exists or something that has already been done. An assumption, however, is supposing something without proof. It's taking something for granted as true when it's not been proven. And for instance, when I, about a year ago, along with many of you, began to first explore the idea of a merger between the two former congregations, I did a lot of research, not on Unitarian Universalist beliefs, which I mostly knew, but on UU culture. And I ran across many UU jokes that seemed to all be based on a similar premise. And one of the jokes I came across was, how many Unitarian Universalists does it take to change a light bulb? There are three possible answers. First, there is no fixed number of UUs needed to change a light bulb. But the committee to change a light bulb must have a quorum. Or the second answer, it doesn't require any UUs to change a light bulb, since UUs accept a light bulb the way it is. Or third and last, it doesn't require any UUs to change a light bulb because UUs are not afraid of the dark. A second joke that also very much concerned me, that arguing with a Unitarian Universalist, it seems, is a lot like mud wrestling with a pig. Pretty soon you realize the pig likes it. Now, it's often said that comedy and tragedy are based on false assumptions. Romeo, in the story of Romeo and Juliet, as you know, committed suicide because he assumed Juliet was dead when she had only passed out. And I initially assumed, on the basis of a few jokes, that Unitarian Universalists have lots of committees. They do lots of talking and lots of arguing. But fortunately, my experiences have given me the opposite impression. And that's continued to be the case. I found people here are passionate about what they believe, but no more so than anyone else. UU churches have committees, but no more so than other organizations and churches. Indeed, the willingness to collaborate and cooperate is very strong here, and with other Unitarian groups that I've joined. I was with a group of 10 Unitarian Universalist ministers this past Tuesday to talk about issues facing local congregations. And as I was preparing to go to this meeting, I was thinking, oh, this could be a day of endless talking by Unitarians and ministers, since both like to talk a lot. But instead, there was only brief and orderly discussion, no argument. All were polite and did a lot of listening. And the same holds true here for our gathering at Northern Hills Board. It's held, in the years since I've been involved with it, only 3 votes, but it has made many, many important decisions. On every issue, our board has reached a consensus that broadly reflected everyone's opinion. Disagreements were listened to and acknowledged and then used to make the decisions even better. The pleasant truth for me is that UUs are, in reality, nothing like the jokes and stereotypes and possible assumptions I could have made. There are some unique distinctions, but overall, Unitarian Universalists act according to their beliefs to respect the dignity of and listen to every person. But this relatively benign example is played out in situations of far greater consequence. Marriages and relationships are regularly damaged by false assumptions that one partner makes about the actions of their loved one. A partner doesn't surprise the other, for instance, with small gifts anymore, and therefore he or she must not be in love anymore, or so an assumption can go. Businesses routinely make elaborate sales plans based on false assumptions about what consumers want. And wars have been fought based entirely on assumptions that later proved mistaken, like the belief that Iraq's Saddam Hussein had a stockpile of chemical and nuclear weapons. And our nation today struggles with assumptions and stereotypes made about other races and religions and sexualities and genders that not only demean millions of people, but diminish the valuable contributions they could offer. Police officers kill innocent, unarmed African Americans based entirely on false assumptions that all black men are violent or have criminal intentions or are up to no good. Large numbers of our population, including a current candidate for president, demean Muslims based on the false assumption that Islam is a violent religion focused on killing all non-believers. And many of us can look the other way when we encounter a homeless person by assuming he or she is an addict or simply lazy. We often assume the problem with people who suffer in life is something of their own making. They lack a work ethic or are somehow immoral. And if blacks or the poor do succeed in life, we can often attribute it to luck or by getting unfair advantage. Psychologists say that stereotypes and assumptions are mental heuristics that are shortcuts in thinking that help us to save time. People assume and generalize things based on limited facts in order to make sense of a complex world. We categorize and jump to conclusions and fail to see nuance, or we mind read, all in order to deal with an unknowable world. And humans do so because we've been programmed by survival instincts to think and react quickly. We take these mental heuristics or mental shortcuts. It takes too long, for instance, to investigate whether or not a particular snake is dangerous. We've all seen or heard about someone who's died from a snake bite. So many people then, like me, stereotype and fear all snakes. But more than that, humans have found that their survival depends on combining into cooperative groups. But our cooperation does not extend to people who are outside of our particular group. Indeed, psychologists have shown that people closely identify with people in their own family or city or ethnicity or religion or church or gender or sexual orientation. But they fear and compete with people in other groups, in groups outside their own. We tend to see huge differences between our group and other groups, even though the differences are often very, very small and minimal. Irish Catholics and Protestants have fought bloody battles for centuries over small differences in religious belief, even though both groups are Christian. Sunni and Shia Muslims despise one another over differing beliefs about who rightfully succeeded Muhammad, even though both groups see Muhammad as the messenger of God. In our own nation, racist assumptions still linger, even though the differences between blacks and whites are remarkably small. Over 75% of all African Americans living today have white ancestry. Substantial portions of their genes come from white ancestors. It's a legacy of white slave owners raping their female slaves. But hatred, therefore, towards African Americans by some whites is, therefore, animosity towards their own relatives. And such hatreds, as I say, are a product of group identity. We categorize people into other groups while believing that those within our particular group are good. And we often demonize those in other groups as inferior and less intelligent. In that regard, experts say that making stereotypical assumptions directly results from egotism. They indicate that group chauvinism results from a lack of self-esteem. If a group or individual is at peace with itself, assumptions about others are much, much lower. But when a group or individual self-esteem is threatened, false assumptions and prejudice are higher. And that was the case in 1920s and 1930s Germany, after its humiliating defeat in World War I. Nazi hatred towards Jews was an explicit way to boost German self-esteem. And the hateful bombast of Hitler belied the very deep insecurity within him and within many of his countrymen. And I believe we're probably witnessing a similar trend today. As demographic diversity in the United States increases, some white, straight males feel threatened economically and socially. They are no longer at the apex of society. And as their self-esteem is assaulted, many react in hateful ways towards blacks and immigrants and Muslims and women and homosexuals. It's sadly a common attitude to tear down another person in order to somehow feel better about oneself. But challenging our assumptions and the assumptions we make is a difficult process. But each of us make assumptions without even realizing we're doing so. But experts offer two primary ways to challenge our assumptions. First, before we act on an assumption, experts say we should first conduct a pre-mortem, a pre-autopsy, to discover facts. And that is, we should critically examine our assumptions. The next time, for example, any of us have a disagreement with a romantic partner, we should stop and think of the assumptions we are making about the other. And we can do so by looking for weak spots in our thinking. And we should undertake a fact-finding mission to find and to learn opposing thoughts. We should think of as if our assumption is wrong, and then list all of the arguments that will prove it wrong. And we must intentionally move outside our group or the group identity we personally have and get to know people in other groups. And this task involves much greater communication with one another, with our romantic partners or fellow church members or friends of other races and religions. We must engage in honest conversation, seeking to listen and even adopt their arguments, all for the sake of eliminating false assumptions. And second, the second solution to making assumptions that experts suggest is we must reject black and white, good and bad thinking about other people. As I discussed in a January message on the merits of the color gray, truth, I believe, lies somewhere between two opposite polar extremes. And to avoid making false assumptions, we must look for gray zone similarities between people, instead of categorizing them according to our perceived assumptions. As an example, Christians and Jews and Muslims should be known more for how they are alike. Each religion honors the same Creator God. Each religion recognizes Abraham as the father of their faith. Each religion advocates charity towards all people. And each establishes the golden rule as the primary ethic for a moral life. In other words, these three world religions, their core foundational beliefs and values are the same. And likewise, many races that comprise humanity are rapidly blending. We are truly becoming one human race. In 1980, less than 5% of all marriages were interracial. Today, over 20% are, and that percentage is increasing annually. Anthropologists say that perhaps within 100 years, we will be and live in a world, people will live in a world with one race, much like the olive-skinned people of Brazil, who are a three-way blend of black and native and white. And to further my point, human sexual orientation in most people has also been shown to be remarkably similar and fluid. Most millennials, young people, cannot understand why there are even categories of orientation that override the simple idea of affection between two consenting adults. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm and we stand on the side of love, a unifying spiritual ethic that all religions promote. Finding what unites instead of what falsely divides us is thus an essential value. Jesus practiced this by intentionally reaching out to the women and children and the diseased and the poor and the sinner and the criminal and the Jew and the non-Jew of his time. He moved beyond stereotypes to see one's inherent humanity. And like Mother Teresa said about the poor whom she served, he saw the face of God in every person. And the Buddha taught the same. The path to enlightenment is to let go of selfish thinking and desires. We must be caring and gentle towards ourselves, as Cheryl Lexon encouraged last week. But that is only the means to a more important end. We must love and serve others without prejudice. And interestingly, core Islamic belief promotes this ethic. Allah, the Quran says, sees no differences between people. We are his children, and Allah sees only our hearts. And this is why when pilgrims travel to Mecca and circle the Kaaba, the focal point of Allah's earthly presence, each person must wear a simple white garment, recognizing that there is neither male or female, or rich or poor, or black or white, or young or old. It's a beautiful tapestry of humanity from all over the world coming together. In the presence of all that Muslims believe is good and divine in the world, there is an assumption-free zone of one human family. And in our homes, and in our workplaces, and in our churches, and in our cities, we must hopefully create the same. And I wish you all much peace and joy.